Quorum just showed up, and let's call this meeting to order. And I would assume, Representative Liddy, did you read the minutes of March 27,
1917? Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm happy to move the minutes from March 17.
Thank you. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Passed. Representative Davis, welcome to our committee.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
I will move House File 3215, and we would love to have you explain it so we can pass it in a quick way.
Oh. Thank you very much. I rest my case. No, thank you very much, Mr. Chairman and members. House File 3215 is a bill that makes some clarifications for funding for a project that the Preston Historic Society has been working on some years. Back when this committee was first formed in 2009, Chair Mary Murphy she was the chair, and I was the lead Republican on the committee. And so after the constitutional amendment passed, Chair Murphy, who did a wonderful, wonderful job putting us together, we were working we had nothing to work from. But I think Chair Murphy put together a great bill to set up how the legacy committee would work. In there was a provision in 2009 that stated that a certain project, the Preston Elevator project, was eligible for funding. And that's the language in the 2009 bill. I don't know if staff has that anywhere. But what we're saying here, that there are some questions about what this does. This clears it up that project will move forward. So I would stand for any questions. Like I said, in 2009 it said it is eligible, and we're just doing the funding here to make sure that this project gets going. It's been very good to work with the State Historical Society. They, of course, do a wonderful job for Minnesota, and we just basically want to make this as a clarification.
Yeah.
I'd stand for questions.
Representative Murphy's helped me out a lot, too. But Chairman Davis, would you like this to be laid over for possible inclusion or go to the floor?
I would prefer be laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay. So we did move it that way. Is there any discussion about House File 3215? Anybody from the audience would like to discuss 3215? Seeing none, all in favor of having House File 3215 laid over for possible inclusion in the... Yeah, we're just going to lay it over.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members, and I would like to thank your staff for helping me with this. I think they did a great job, so appreciate it.
They helped me even more than you. Representative Fabian. We got the wrong version?
Yeah.
Well, let's go with the other bill first then. Since we have the wrong version of the Lesard Sam's bill in our packets, we will go on to Representative Green's House File 3269. Do you like to make a motion to lay that over, or?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to make a motion to lay over House File 3296.
Okay. With that, 3269.
Oh, excuse me. Yeah, read it backwards. You're right. Okay. 3269.
Would you like to explain your bill?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The bill is actually a pretty simple bill. It just requires that it be put into the Outdoor Heritage Bill, that we can't give money for projects that promote acts of domestic terrorism. And then in Subdivision 6, the new language in Subdivision 6 will impose a penalty, a civil penalty. If someone is found guilty of that, it will be administered by the Department of Administration. And it does give a limit that it can't exceed 10%, or it can't exceed 10 times the amount of the grant for funding. but it doesn't have to go that high. And that would be up to the department to establish whichever project, if anyone was hurt by a project, I would assume, or not. But that's really the bill. It's simple. If you've read it, it's pretty self-explanatory. So if there's any questions, I'll try to answer them.
With that, does anybody, any members have any questions about House File 3269? The author's here. He'd love to answer them. Seeing none. Would anybody from the audience like to speak to 3269? Seeing none, pretty easy bill. I thought it was going to be a hard one.
Another green bill. We're all on board.
Boy, another green bill.
I'm marking that.
With that, I will, Representative Green will renew his motion to have, no, we don't have to have a motion.
Nope.
With that, 3269 is laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill.
Thank you.
And we're waiting. Would you like to start without your new bill there? I think we can. Okay, I'll do that after. I will move House File 2789. I would assume it's a delete all amendment. We're going to be. Bill, we're going to look at, or is it just going to bend this?
Mr. Chair, House File 2789 was amended in our Environment and Natural Resources Policy and Finance Committee to include the notification issue that's been talked about. And that, in the bill that you have in your packets, members, that amended bill is not there, but staff is out working on that, and hopefully they'll have that here in a few minutes, and we can talk about the bill as it is before us. But House File 2789, do not intend to do any amendments here. What I would like to do, I've got Mark Johnson here from the Lessard Council. He's the executive director. If you want, Mr. Chair, he can walk through it, or I myself can walk through it. There is one amendment I know, and you can do with that as you wish, Mr. Chair.
Well,
it's not my amendment.
We'll have Representative Green has amendment, A4 amendment. Would you like to do that from your chair, or just?
No, this is fine.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is an amendment that I had last year. It was put on last year and taken out in conference committee. It also is a pretty simple amendment. What it does, it gives the counties the authority to say whether or not they want to have any more non-taxable land purchased or land purchased in the county that would be non-taxable to them, and gives them a little leverage should they choose to use it. It's completely voluntary. You know, it's not mandatory. So if the county files a no net gain policy, then they can say to whatever entity may want to purchase land within their county that they would have to sell equivalent amounts to hold the county harmless in the transaction as far as property tax and available land for the common folk, I guess.
Anybody have any questions? Members of the A4 amendment. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering if we could hear a couple comments from Mr. Johnson, if that's possible. It just seems like there's a bit of it's not exactly clear what you're trying. I mean, I get what you're trying to accomplish. I don't necessarily agree, but it's, you know, it's it just doesn't seem like the amendment. It seems like the two parts of it are a little confusing. Maybe, I don't know if you care to comment, or you probably don't want to, but I feel like now.
Welcome to our committee again. Would you give your name for the record, please?
Mr. Chair, I'm Mark Johnson, Executive Director for the Lessard-Sams Outdoor Heritage Council.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly and members, this amendment, it hasn't gone before the council itself because the council hasn't met since December and doesn't meet again until the 13th of April. So I don't have anything for you from the council itself. The, you know, I have my own, I've read the amendment, but I don't know if there's anything really I can provide from an insights for it, but, especially not on behalf of the council.
Representative Lilly?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Green, I was just kind of wondering, like, on the, so Kent County's on the second part, is it, it seems like the two are not necessarily related, like the first part, no net gain. So on the second part, are they required to sell if, or is it all counties? Would it just, you know, every county in the state of Minnesota, or would they have a letter on hand, or just help me through, please, sir.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, it's the counties, you know, whatever county out of the 87 chooses to file no net gain policy. And what it would do is it would require the DNR to have on file that county or any other entity so that if they did decide to purchase land, for instance, if there was what they considered to be a very valuable piece of land within that county, say 1,000 acres, just for example, that the county could say, in for instance, Clearwater County, which is already 37% non-taxable, could say we just can't afford to lose any more of our tax base. We already have a lot of people looking for property, and it's getting way more expensive, and people just can't afford it. They could say, if you want that 1,000 acres, then you have to sell other parcels of equal value, whether they be 40 acres, 80 acres in different parts. So it's really pretty simple. And Representative Lilly, it is becoming a real problem for us. It's not even becoming a problem. It is a problem. You know, we have some counties that are approaching or even exceeding 90% non-taxable lands. And when you're talking some pretty poor counties already and they're struggling to make their property tax base stretch, this is just something to give them a little comfort should they choose. Now, if you're living in a county that you think you want more, this would be a really good bill for you because it frees up more money for you because they're not buying in the counties that don't want any more public land.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Green. I'm very empathetic to your and have seen the charts, you know, where the counties are heavily encumbered or whatever, you know, already purchased up a lot of the property. And the council is, I mean, just as one member, I just, you know, from the, like, the table talk, you know, when you talk to people, they're just confused because some of the counties that were, like, say, don't buy it, they were actually asking for more land to be bought. That's all. It's just to, you know, just to clarify, you know, like, sometimes the members are confused because the counties aren't exactly that you refer to. Yeah, I think towards the end of session last year, and remember there were some letters that were saying that no net gain, and later on, you know, like this cycle, they were asking to buy more land. So it's just, it's not necessarily that you're wrong. It's just trying to figure out like a clear message necessarily. But I know the council is really making an effort. And when Representative Fabian gets an opportunity to go through the bill, you'll see a lot of the purchases, if there are some, or a lot of the effort are in the prairie lands in western Minnesota or even south west Minnesota. So it's kind of not in some of the areas, I think, that have already been heavily covered already. So, anyways, I'm not sure that I'm necessarily agreeing with you all that much.
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if the Representative Green could explain what happens with funds generated from the sale of this property. It says that the Commissioner of Natural Resources, if the county has a no net gain, has adopted by ordinance a no net gain policy, then if there's additional land within that county acquired, the commissioner must sell to a private individual or entity an equal number of acres of land within the county. I'm just wondering what happens to the funds generated from that sale. And if the land that's being sold was acquired with legacy funds, it seems like maybe it should be required to be returned to the legacy fund. I'm not even sure if there's a process for that in place. Or how this would work exactly.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, thank you, Representative Freiberg, and I think that that would already be in statute. I think that it already would go back into the legacy fund, and if not, I can check on that issue for that.
Yeah. Representative Freiberg.
Thank you for that answer. I'd be interested to know that. It also says, I mean, there's no, it sounds like the commissioner has no discretion, so if there's only, they must, the commissioner must sell to a private individual or entity, so there's, you know, if in the event there, you know, there is some requirements placed in here as far as the value of the land, so it has to be, you know, it can't be sold for less than 75% of the appraised value, but I don't see anything related to what the use of the land is. I mean, it's, you know, if there's a potentially objectionable use going on there, I don't even know what that would be, but but only one person interested in buying the land and it meets the price requirement, it sounds to me like the commissioner would have no discretion not to sell to that private individual. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, yeah, that's correct. It's supposed to be sold to private individuals, so that's what it would do.
Okay.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Fabian.
Yeah.
Is this bill from Environment Committee and Natural Resources Committee, or is this bill going to, back to?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, the bill has been to the Environment Committee, okay. And it's here, and the next stop, I believe, is Ways and Means. And then it will be to the House floor.
Okay. And Representative Fabian, did this no net gain counties to the counties and this amendment, was this discussed in the Environment and Natural Resources Committee?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, no.
Would this amendment... Mr. Chair, Representative Fabian, would this amendment be part of the discussion with the PILT issues as well as in the county issues in Natural Resources Committee on another bill?
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, staff may have to help here a little bit on that, but... I assume it could be amended to another bill someplace else in another committee, another hearing, but maybe Ms. Taylor can help out on that if possible. Mr. Chair?
Taylor?
Mr. Chair, members, the amendment itself I don't think would have to go back because it's within the purview of the legacy. Regarding PILT, there may be some PILT implications, but typically it wouldn't be then sent to taxes. Something like this wouldn't be sent to taxes.
I think we should ask her about Freiberg's question, too.
Mr. Chair, members, and this is in regard to where the funds would go once the lands were sold. It would depend on the land. For example, if it was school trust land, that would have to go to the permanent school fund. As far as if it was like Outdoor Heritage Fund previously, there's already a mechanism to sort of repay or buy something that's equal in value with the same purposes. So that process would be played out.
Okay. Representative Fabian.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And what Representative Green talked about is something that is important to northern counties. And I think that Representative Lilly has sat in on, doesn't sit in, he is a member of the Lessard Council, as I am. And Chair Anderson, who's from International Falls, has heard the concerns, and we know what the concerns are. I can tell you that in this year's bill, and I respect the work that that Representative Green is doing in this year's bill. You know, when you go north of Highway 2, if you look at your recommendation, the summary sheet I think that you have in your packet, I'm not exactly sure if you have that or not, but as I look through it and I checked with staff, of all of the dollars that are being spent, the only place that could possibly result in acquisition north of Highway 2, I'll say, would be under Forest Subdivision 3, where the Minnesota Forest of the Future Phase 6 plan is there. And that would be an acquisition that could possibly happen if DNR targeted it. But DNR is on record. Commissioner Landwehr has said a number of times that he is not interested in acquiring lands in counties where the counties do not favor that acquisition. So that should give some people some comfort. And then I do want to point out, too, that, you know, of all the activities that are going on in this bill, there's about $114 million. 86% of the acres of activity, and this is restoration, enhancement, and protection, acquisition, 86% of it is accomplished outside of the Northern Forest region. So we've really focused our attention on southern Minnesota, western Minnesota, southwestern Minnesota, where there are some issues, that, and I'll talk about those as we get further into the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Fabian. And now, I've given this a lot of thought since I voted with Representative Green last year in the last session on the amendments. But I really don't believe that no net gain or PILT or any of that belongs in the Legacy Committee. I don't think that's part of the charge that Representative Davids was talking about in his bill that we, when we created the bill. And I think Environment and Natural Resources or Government Operations Committee should have much more say about county positions and whether there's no net gain or no monetary losses to counties, and all that should belong to some major committee when our charge is the three-fifths money and the legacy funding. And I just don't think we should entertain these amendments any longer.
Okay. We have someone from the DNR here that would probably add a little to this conversation. I remember when I was in LaSarge Sams, there's one piece of land that I remember very well. It was a road that had to be built into a forest in order to get the logs out. And I was very glad to buy that piece of land. And there are some land, pieces of land that I don't want counties to take away from the DNR or anybody else. So there are some conflicts in my mind. But with that, Ms. Garlish, would you please come to the table? We got the first team here today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Annalie Garlitz, and I'm with the Department of Natural Resources. And as it's been mentioned, this no-net gain language is the same language that Representative Green has brought forward in the past, and Assistant Commissioner Meyer has testified in opposition of this language on behalf of DNR, and we continue to have concerns about this language. Right now, DNR is working to strategically acquire, as Representative Fabian said, different lands through this program. And we are also currently working with counties on the Strategic Land Asset Management Program, which helps to consolidate DNR lands, working with the counties to identify what we should dispose of, what we should aggregate in different areas. So we are working with the counties. I'd also like to add that current statute also indicates that we need, when we acquire WMA land and other properties, that we do go to the counties to ask for county resolution to approve or not approve particular acquisitions. So we are happy to work with the counties. We intend to keep doing it. It's in statute, and we feel like we have some good communication going with counties under that particular statute. This amendment, some of the concerns that we have is that this really might pit certain outdoor recreation units against one another. If we acquire something, do we get rid of an access? Do we get rid of some state parkland? Do we get rid of state forest land? Those are some questions that we would have to look at, and it's not always apples to apples when you look at the benefits and the economy and the recreation that those different lands offer residents in the state. So I'd just like to finish with DNR will continue working with counties and just again reflect what Representative Fabian indicated about DNR going out strategically finding lands. And if a county doesn't want land, we're in discussions with them and we're negotiating with them. And there are certain areas of the state that we're already looking at.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions then. First of all, you know, you say that DNR always looks for a county resolution, and let's say, for instance, the county says no. Has the DNR ever gone ahead and purchased that anyway?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, I'm not aware of I'm not aware of any instances. I do know where instances where the county has said no and the DNR has not acquired that land, or in, I'm thinking correctly, a certain instance in Fillmore County where the county opposed the acquisition and DNR worked with the county board to kind of cut out certain areas that they were concerned about. The county board then went back and approved the acquisition once we worked with them, and we're happy to have those conversations. They're important.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, well, I can tell you from talking to my counties that they will tell you in no uncertain terms that there's a lot of times they do not wish to have it purchased, but usually it gets purchased anyway. Now, in this particular bill, I want to clarify a statement that I made in Legacy that about half of this land was in fee title. And Representative Fabian corrected me because he said there's 47 projects and only 21 of them have fee in them. However, when I got some questions answered from Mr. Johnson, and thank you for that, by the way, but the reason you get up to 47 projects is that they count paying for the projects at the end as a project. So there's really only 43, 44 projects at the most, and so roughly half of these are fee title. And do you know how many out of those 21 projects do not ask for county board approval?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, and members, if I understand the question correctly, it said how many of the fee title acquisition proposals actually ask for county board approval?
Yeah.
I don't have the number off the top of my head. There are some that do, but those that do, they're required by law, and those are the ones that DNR is actually acquiring itself. If they're, I know that all of the NGOs, all the non-government organizations who are applying for these dollars have told us that they notify the counties ahead and they offer to talk to the counties about their concerns, about the project, et cetera, go through the PILT implications and so on. What the current taxes are, what the PILT anticipated would be, and so on. But I don't believe any of them are seeking county board approval because, again, it's not statutorily required.
Representative Green.
Mr. Chair, and that is my point. There are about approximately half, and I'm not going to – I don't have the numbers in front of me. I didn't grab all my papers because I was just going to make this quick. But they're purchased by the NGOs. A great number of those within this project and others, after they're purchased by the NGOs, they are either donated back to the DNR or to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. And so we now have the land that's in the process or in the possession of the state or U.S. Fish and Wildlife with legacy dollars that has never gone through the county board approval. So that is there. Do you know how many of the projects in here will be turned back over to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, and
The previous question.
To the previous question. Let's see. Those seeking county board approval, we have the DNR. One of them was through DNR. Let me double check here. We have the numbers coming from my staff. There's another 2, 3, 4 of them. Oh, actually, ones in the metro area, especially the Mississippi Headwaters Board, Leech Lake area. Those are all seeking county board approval. So there's 4 of those 21 so far. So 4 of them. So we have that figure for you. I'm sorry, your other question, sir?
Mr. Green.
I was, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I was looking up stuff and forgot my other question. Okay, how many of the projects in here will be turned over to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife after they're purchased by an NGO?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green and members, I don't know that figure at the top of my head. I can get that for you, though. I believe that there are several easements that would be held by the Fish and Wildlife Service. Off the top of my head, there's a – oh, there we go. Representative Fabian has the number, my faithful council member, 3 projects, he says.
Representative Green.
Okay. How many of the NGO projects then will be purchased by – or be handed back over to the DNR when you're done?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'll have to take a quick gander here as we go through. So it would be – I believe it would be – 1, 2, pardon me, I won't count out loud. Mr. Chair and members and Representative Green, off the top of my head, very quickly here, a quick count, it looks like a potential of 8, and that's just knowing that DNR is involved in those acquisitions whether or in those projects. At times, though, those projects, the only job DNR would have would be maybe a restoration or enhancement or some other water device or something like that, but it potentially 8 as I read through very quickly, and I can get that figure for you specifically if you would like.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. So out of the 2021 fee for title, if you take the 8 and the 3, you're looking at, if it was about half that were going to NGOs, about half then of those are getting turned back over to either the DNR or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So pretty much all the projects will end up within the purview of either the state or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, actually, if my quick count was correct at 8 and the 3 is correct, then we're looking at 11 out of 21. So it would be roughly half of the projects. It would entail something that would be land going to the DNR afterwards.
Okay, Mr. Chair, and that kind of makes my point, that roughly half the projects would go to NGOs, which didn't seek county board approval, and those would actually be turned back over to the state or the U.S. Fish and Wildlife. So but I don't want to continue to beat that. I mean, that's fine. It's not fine, but it's pretty much been taken out. I'm only, I could go on for a long time, but I'm not going to because no one wants to sit here that long, and it looks like most people have made up their mind anyway. But I would point out that in these projects, there are county locations, Becker, Norman, Polk, Roseau, Manoman, Wadena. And so there are projects. And there's quite a few, or not quite a few, but there's a few projects in here that it says county locations, and it gives a whole bunch of different counties, and we don't even know which counties they are. Some of them specify money, how much is going to be spent on enhancements or restorations or fee, and they don't tell us where they're at. And I'm wondering how you can come up with a number that you're going to spend if you haven't even really picked the site yet.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, part of the process is it's kind of like what came first, the chicken or the egg. The NGOs come in to the council with a request for funding. They have certain projects that they maybe would like to do, but until they get the funding, through this legislative process, they really can't nail those projects down. So then at that point, they can go out and start having conversations in terms of if it were an acquisition. That's a little bit different. But the enhancements and the restoration projects that are in this bill are all predetermined, with maybe a couple of exceptions. They've been through local communities. They've worked with the Trout Unlimited or the Lake George Dam, Anoka County Parks. They've worked with the city of Hallock. They've identified a great number of projects that they're going to be doing. And in the cases where a project may not have been identified specifically in here, It may have something to do with they don't know for sure if they have the funding or not. So there is some flexibility there, I'll admit that, to be able to go out and find another project, especially in our Conservation Partners grant program that we'll be talking about when we get to the bill. This is a substantial amount of money that's going out to local groups that are going to be able to go out and identify projects that they see that are critical for their needs. It might be the Roseau River Chapter of the Minnesota Deer Hunters Association or the Roseau Lake of the Woods Ruff Grouse Society. They've got projects going up there, and they can apply for these grants, and then they can go out and do those. But, of course, those projects are not identified when we're going through the committee process because they don't know if they've got any money for a project. So sorry for the long-winded answer, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair and members, just to Representative Green's question, the parcel lists on each one of the projects has come up with parcel lists. And remember, that's during the time frame when we have our request for funding proposals come in or a request for project proposals. So that's in April through May. And then the council looks at those through the rest of the summer and fall and has hearings and everything, coming up with the decisions of who should be receive recommendation for allocation and who shouldn't. And, of course, then it comes to the legislature and a bill. So the council is vetting it through their accomplishment plans. And I know some of you have received this, the book of the accomplishment plans. If anybody else would like them, we're glad we've got extra copies for anybody who wants them in the legislature. So please feel free to ask for those. But those parcel lists are, at that point, the best knowledge that the group has on where their acquisition is going to be and what they're going to be doing. It's kind of like a shopping list, really. They try to stay with that shopping list. If they're going to make a deviation from it by adding a parcel on, like a brand-new, you know, phenomenal parcel comes up that's extremely high ecological value or whatever, then they have to amend that by going through filing an amendment. It comes to staff, and potentially it could go to the council. But there's a process for amending those parcels. All of the parcels on the parcel list are not going to be acquired or leased or eased. It's just they have to provide us their best parcels, their best eyeball of what they're going to work, what they're going to do, and where they're going to do it, and then they testify to that again. Just one other thing, another way that the council knows how many acres are going to be acquired is that they attest to how many acres they're planning on acquiring, as well as restoring and enhancing. And then their budget also limits their acquisition abilities based within their budget that they put out, as well as they need to say what they're going to be spending on restoration enhancement, et cetera.
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, well, it's kind of like when you have grandchildren, correct? Okay. So it's kind of like you put your shopping list for the grandchildren for Christmas, right? And then you figure out how much that list is going to cost. Maybe this doesn't work for Gunther because cost is no... So anyway, for most of us, then we have to, you know, figure out, okay, then we have this much to spend, and so we have to cross some of the things off the list. So I'm just poking at you a little bit, Mr. Chair.
That money.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that the answers are satisfactory for me, but I do want to make a statement that, and I've told Representative Fabian this too, that in the past that the land acquisitions are upwards of 10 to 12,000 acres, and this is down to under 7, between 6 and 7, and I do appreciate that. I do. But it hasn't changed my county's concerns about what's going to happen in the future. And I will, because I see that I probably don't have the votes to pass this today anyway, I will withdraw the amendment for today. But I can almost guarantee you it's probably going to come back next year. So,
very well. Thank you. Still in time?
Just quickly.
Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Green, I appreciate you withdrawing it. And but I also appreciate the discussion. And you actually have moved the needle, just so you know. I mean, it's not the group is definitely listening. And Representative Fabian kind of captured it, and trying to respect, and I tried to mention that earlier, but, I mean, the group really is, you know, conscious of that and trying to work with counties, you know, so the notification thing, they're really trying that. trying to respect the county's wishes on purchases. I mean, the group, the council, I think, is just really making an effort. It passed on a 12-0 vote. You know, you win some, you know, purchases. But Representative Fabian really captured it. I mean, these, a lot of these aren't big NGOs. They're local people too. A lot of DNR, or not DNR, but deer hunters, pheasants, you know, fixing a trout stream. I mean, there's some really neat stuff. So please take a look at some of the neat things that are going on. And I think my problem with your amendment is every once in a while a treasure comes along, and if we had, like, your amendment in place, and I always have a hard time balancing that, if there's a piece of land that we should really go after, you know, and maybe the locals don't want it bought as much, but, boy, you hate to miss a chance at, you know, statewide, you know, I mean, everybody would really see it. Maybe three county board members, you know, might not agree, but, I mean, state, I mean, people are going to get it. So those treasures are just, you hate to miss those chances, but you've succeeded, sir, I mean, in moving the needle and having the council's definitely paying attention, and a conscience, and the NGOs and others are paying attention and trying to really respect it. Even if there's no legislation passed, I've talked to Mr. Johnson and when they request, it's all going to have, you know, a lot of the stuff will be in place as far as, like, working with locals. And so you may not, you know, pass your amendment. I'm sorry I'm going so long, but you're actually moving the needle, so.
Okay. Representative Green?
I just have to make one statement, and if you want to keep talking, I'll remain silent after that. But, yeah, the land that we live on is a treasure. It is. And I would like it if my kids and grandkids had an opportunity to own it instead of having to worry about being a tenant of the state. And when you look at Beltrami County, and you look at Clearwater County, and Monoman County, and many others who are getting swallowed up by the state coming in, either purchasing or because the taxes continue to increase because of the loss of land, we end up with folks losing their land to tax forfeiture. And it continues to spiral, and we're getting kind of angry about it up there. So, yeah, the land is a treasure, but we're a free people. And one of our rights here is the ability to own land, and we're watching it be diminished, at least. And so that's my statement to your comments.
Well, Representative Green withdraws the A4 amendment. Representative Fabian, would you like to discuss your bill more?
Mr. Chair, if it pleases you, I'd like to have Executive Director Johnson walk through it.
Director Johnson.
Mr. Chair, members, with the bill in front of you, there's also a handout which Representative Fabian brought your attention to a little bit ago. You may want to turn to that, and we can walk. I'll use that to walk through the bill. It's a little bit easier, and it'll be very quick. I must say that my job is easier because your House nonpartisan staff has, Janelle Taylor has put together an overview of the bill, which is quite good, so thank you. But I'll mention some other things as we go along. First of all, because we're on the subject of county notification, I should mention some things that have happened. This last year, the council had staff send out a questionnaire to the NGOs who are applying for these funds. And so we sent to all the NGOs who are in this bill who are going to be receiving dollars or potentially receiving dollars for acquisition, and whether it's fee with PILT or without PILT, and asked them about whether they had any problems with county notification and what they did toward that end. Unanimously through the bunch, they said they didn't have a problem with county notification. Unanimously also, they all said that basically right now they're doing the same thing, which is informing the county ahead of time, at least 30 days ahead of time or more, as I remember. Also, they were doing that in writing. They were then contacting the counties and asking them for, or offering to them the opportunity to get together, come and talk about any concerns they might have, as well as in the written information they provide them, as I mentioned earlier, with the tax information is on the property as well as what PILT would be and so on, so they can really discuss the matter as a whole. And the council also did one other thing, and that is that they're changing, effective with this bill, there will be a change in our acquisition reimbursement guidelines, which is called Attachment E through DNR, and that means that the NGOs have to sign that to be eligible for acquiring or receiving the the funds, but that attachment E requires them to provide that written information, written verification that the county did receive notification, and all of the, whether it's county minutes, whether it's a writing that goes along with that, and so on. So the council was trying to do what it could to listen to Representative Green, Representative Fabian, and others who have concerns about whether the counties are really getting in on the ahead of time. And we're looking at some other things that potentially can be done, too. With that, I'll just quickly run through the bill. First of all, within this bill, this folder, I want to mention, notice, have you notice that on the inside there are two different pages that look very similar, and they're charts. The one on the left is acres, and it's the activity or the outputs by acres, and on the right side is the activity or outputs by funding. This center loose sheet is one side of it goes directly with the acre side, and at the top it says acres on it. In other words, or distribution of acres by ecological section. And the other side is distribution by funds. So those go directly together. The reason for the center page is these charts match up directly in the middle of the center folds, or the middle of the two center pages with the centerfold loose leaf. And then below that, there are other charts here, that a further chart that gives you an idea within this bar chart what's happening. Where are those dollars or where are those acres taking place? So on the acres side of this inside sheet, you have restoration in the metro urban area is 3,447 acres. And on and through the columns, whether it's the forest prairie area or whether it's southeast forest, the prairie grasslands, or so on. And then down through what the activity is, whether it's fee with PILT, whether it's fee or fee without PILT acquisition, whether it's enhancement restoration. So that's the reason for that, and hopefully it'll give you a better, or your staff, a better review of where those dollars are, a little better idea of what's where the activity is happening. If you'll turn to the back of the folder now. We can walk through the bill from there quickly. And in her review of the bill or the summary, Janelle Taylor, Ms. Taylor, put in the totals. But the Prairie subdivision, the bill as a total is $113,943,000 for fiscal year 2019. Subdivision 2 of the bill is the Prairie subdivision, and that's the very first part of this top back here. The total is $35.288 million, and it entails 14 different programs. Only one of those is new. The others are ongoing programs that have been successful, showing detail and showing success to the council. The projects are all in the Prairie region of the state, and part of the Prairie region extends into the outskirts of the metro urban. So, but the concentration of those programs is all on native prairies, grasslands, wetlands, and savannas. The in that section, there's one large appropriation recommendation, which is for $5 million to Bowser, and that's part of the CREP funding, which part of that $15 million that the legislature requested the council to consider this year. So there's $5 million of that. We'll find the other 10 shortly. In the forest subsection or subdivision, which is the next one down, you can see it's shorter. It's about $9 million, $9.131 million of appropriations. There are six programs in there. And all of those are repeat phases, and they are such as the moose habitat enhancement and other things. They're, again, robust, ongoing programs, phases 3 through 6 within that area. Those are all in the forest region, as well as whether it's the northern forest, the southeast forest, or there are some forests through the metro urban area. So it's pretty much the western edge of the state. And that's all, again, focusing on forest, forest wetlands, forest wildlife habitat restoration enhancement, and a little bit of fee acquisition in there as well. The subdivision 4 is the wetlands portion for about $28 million. There are six programs within that, and those are repeat programs, again, or repeat phases, again, robust, successful phases. It's really broken up because it does entail parts of the Prairie region, the forest transition region, which is the center diagonal of the state, the metro urban, and the southeast forest, and all focusing, again, on wetlands, including shallow lakes. And Bowser has an appropriation in there for the other $10 million of that CREP funding. So that's the actually it's Bowser's Rim Wetlands Partnership is that one. And then the fifth subdivision is Habitats, and that's the largest subdivision because it kind of is a catch-all. It's about $41 million, almost $41 million of the appropriation. There are 18 programs there. 8 of those are new programs. 10 of those are repeats, and they range in funding from quite small to from, as low as $539,000. I think that was one of the very smallest one, on up to about $3 million, which was for the Mississippi Headwaters Habitat Corridors Partnership. The as we continue on, you see the administrative portion of Subdivision 6. That really is it's for the contracts management, paying contracts management for this, as well as technical evaluations, which we're required to do by statute, and then renewing the high-priority pre-transaction service account, in a lot of words, for an account that we have to have money available in case, and that's for pre-transaction services from DNR. The subdivisions 8, 9, and 10 cover the availability, the appropriation, the payment conditions, and capital expenditure, capital equipment expenditures, and the mapping requirements. Subdivision 10 in the bill itself, which I believe starts on about page or line 26.33, that's actually a carry forwards, and it's for two different. It's allowing of forward of the extension under the availability of funds for two different appropriations. One is the Minnesota Laws of 2014, Mistinka River Fish and Wildlife Habitat Corridors Rehabilitation Program, and that will extend them out to 2022. And then the other is the 2015 laws, which is the Wild Rice River Corridor Habitat Restoration Program, and allows them, I think, one more year on theirs out to 2021. The last thing that is in here, which Representative Fabian brought attention to, and it was a reason for having to go back and recopy the bill, was on starting on line 27.3, and that's the amendment that was put on in the Environment Committee, and it provides requirements that NGOs be NGOs seeking monies from Outdoor Heritage Funds to acquire land and fee provide notification to the counties in advance. And that advance actually is during that April through May time. Oh, also, and it's notification to the township boards as well, I'm sorry. But it's providing notice to them much more advanced than they've received in the past. And I guess that's my quickest overview for you, Mr. Chair.
Any questions from the member, Steve?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple, and they're really non-controversial, hopefully. You got in your breakdown, I think it said, I'm not going to look it up. We've got money appropriated for doing the transfers, handling the transfer of the land, the purchase of the land, plus the paperwork. So can you tell me how much extra does it cost if we sell the land? If we give a non-government entity the money to buy the land, then we do the paperwork, how much more does it cost for the paperwork when that non-government entity organization hands the land back over to the state? Because we're doubling up on the paperwork there, I'm thinking, and so what's the point of going through the NGO if it's going to end up in the state's hands anyway?
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, did you...
I got a comment too on that.
Go ahead. No.
Well, oftentimes the NGOs are more experienced at this. I know I've had conversations with DNR about what they go through. Their administrative costs, it seems to me, are higher in the end to do that initial acquisition. I don't believe, and maybe Ms. Garlitz can answer this, I don't believe that there are any significant costs in the transfer from NGO to the state of Minnesota through the DNR.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Green and members, the two things with that. First of all, when a piece of property is purchased with Outdoor Heritage Funds, generally, especially if an NGO purchases it, there are requirements from DNR that property be brought up to standards before it's transferred to DNR. Otherwise, so it's restored or enhanced before it goes to DNR. Otherwise, the money is actually in the appropriation. that if, say, if the NGO couldn't do it and DNR had to do it, the money was already there to pay for that. So it's not a double billing, so to speak. The as far as the administrative portion, Subdivision 6 of the bill, the contracts management in there is often not understood, in that people think, well, that's for transferring the lands or whatever. Contracts management is $210,000 in this bill, and it's only that portion that it takes for DNR to oversee the contracts. So they're the fiscal agent that oversees and makes sure the money's being spent properly and that reimbursements are made based on the set criteria beforehand that everybody approves and agrees to.
So great.
Well, thank you for that, and thank you, Mr. Chair. But I do think that the money, when it's appropriated to the entity, whoever it is, there's money in there for the transfer as well. I believe that's true.
Mr. Chair and Representative Green, that is correct. And every transaction has the there's no free lunch. Everything has to come from somewhere. There's no double up on this. If the transaction is paid for through OHF funds and with reimbursement to the entity, then DNR isn't paying for that. If DNR has to do the actual work on the transaction, then the money would go to them. So there's not a doubling up here.
Mr. Chair, but you're doing it twice, are you not? I mean, I know you've said there's no cost to transfer it from the NGO back to the DNR, but it is a transfer, and someone's doing the transfer, right? No?
Representative Fabian.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to point out that in Subdivision 6, the $210,000, that's for contract management for everything in the bill. It's not just for the acquisitions and the transfers.
Okay. One more question, Mr. Chair, and then I will promise this will be the last one. I did have a question on the bill itself, and it's on page 6, starts at line, well, I guess line 6.23. It's Martin County DNR WMA acquisition phase 2. Reading through the book, it looks like you guys are going to, they're going to block a natural drainage. Can you explain what that's about?
Mr. Chair, Representative Green, and members, the probably the easiest way for me to point, I don't know what that drainage is. I haven't seen it. If there is a blockage of a drainage, for instance, when if there's restoration of a wetland that takes place, then at times they'll end up breaking up a tile that may be leaving that wetland so they can be able to restore that wetland. And my guess is that's what this one is. Perhaps.
Mr.
I don't have. Go ahead.
Well, Mr. Chair, if memory serves me correctly, I think the watershed or the SWCD from Martin County came in and testified on this. And you can't legally block a waterway without going through a process at the local level.
Okay. Representative Green.
That's good enough. We've pounded it enough.
It's a great county, by the way.
Yeah.
Any other questions from members? Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just not really a question, just kind of a quick comment about the council. And it's a pretty impressive group, and Representative Fabian can attest to this. Well, the House members were a little weak in the Senate, but the House members are strong. But, you know, you've got people on there that are Ron Shera. I mean, you think, turn on your TV set and you see him in a show and doesn't bring his dog, unfortunately. I don't know. There's the mayor. I'm always impressed with the people, the citizens that are involved. You know, you've got a mayor all the way from International Falls. You know, some of us are lucky to live in a metro and fairly close, but to drive down all the way for a meeting, and there's a lot of meetings. It's pretty impressive. Again, the Senate's kind of a weak spot, but we're pretty good staff. When people ask questions, not pretty good, very good staff. Sorry, but they're willing to answer them. Fabian said you were pretty good. I think you're great. No, he didn't say that. But, there's some neat projects, and maybe Representative Fabian will talk about it, but when you get the chance to see some of the work that's done with this money, I think the Minnesota voters would be pretty proud. And I, being on the council, you get to see some of the before and afters. But when you get on a wetland that's been restored, or a trout stream, or some prairie that's been restored, it's pretty neat stuff. And a lot of the money does go towards restoration. But I don't know if Representative Fabian, one of the things that I thought was kind of neat is really the stress on the grants this year, and then helping out the Bowser problem with for the state, because there's huge matching dollars that are there for us in the state of Minnesota. But maybe Representative Fabian wants to talk about the $11 million in grants. It's pretty neat because that goes to the smaller groups and can thanks for bringing this forward. I think it's a good bill, and it passed 12-0. And again, thank you.
Representative Fabian, you have...
I'll close real quickly, Mr. Chair. And what he's referring to is on your summary that you have is the Conservation Partners Legacy Grant. It's in subdivision 5, letter R. That's the program that's in your packet, I believe, that allows for a lot of the small local groups to go out and identify something, working with a local wildlife manager or something like that. Maybe it's a private property. They go through a very simple process for the grants that are up to $50,000 over at DNR. I met with them last week, and it's something that was a very, very high priority of the entire committee, was to get more money out to these small local groups and let them go out and identify their projects and then come in and apply for these grants. The other one I'd like to point out, and this just happens to be in my district, but it could have been in anybody's district in rural Minnesota, the city of Hallock came with a project that they've been working on for a number of years. That's a removal of a dam, and then they want to improve the habitat, the fishery, just a whole host of issues there. And they came in asking for $2 million to do this. In our first round of appropriations, we funded it for $1.5 million. And I told the committee, I said, well, then we might just as well not even do it, because there's no way in the world that a city as small as Hallock is going to be able to come up with $500,000 to finish the project. It will not happen. So the next time through, now we got it up to $1.75 million. Well, then the last day of the that we met, Senator Lang, not so weak in the Senate, actually came up with a proposal there, because there was some money left on the bottom line that allowed us to put the money into the Conservation Partners Grant Program, and then also fully funded the program up in Hallock. That's going to be that's pretty cool, and the people up there are excited about it. And we did the same thing on the Rum River Project. So we've heard, the council has heard, as Representative Lilly said, there's been some concerns expressed about what's going on and acquisitions and all that sort of stuff. But of all the money that people asked for coming into, the average recommendation, for a lot of the bigger groups was 42% of their original ask. But these smaller programs, when you take a look through here, whether it's the Martin County one or the Kitson County one, Hallock one, we fully funded or nearly fully funded a whole bunch of those, because we know that they do not have the capacity to raise those dollars locally. And we really, really believe in local people doing great projects. So with that, Mr. Chair, I have a meeting with the Army Corps of Engineers.
Seeing no other questions, we will lay this over for possible inclusion.
No.
We have passed on to Ways and Means, right?
I believe so.
Okay.
Ways and Means.
Yep. Let me renew my motion to lay it over, to renew it, to pass, and go to Ways and Means. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. You're on your way to Ways and Means.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there any other thing to be brought before this meeting? Seeing nothing, we are adjourned.